Hey, this is Greg Little from Bethany Baptist Church. I'm so thankful that you decided to join us on this podcast. I trust that the Lord will use it in your life to encourage you, strengthen you, and challenge you wherever you are in your walk with Him. For more information about Bethany, you can visit us online at bethanybc.ca. And now let's open our hearts and minds to what the Lord has for us. Now let's take our Bibles and turn to Matthew chapter 16. We are back in the book of Matthew, and I'm excited to be here again. I hope you're not growing weary of the book of Matthew. We've been in here for, I think we are at message 74. So it's been a year and a half, if not longer, because we took some breaks in the summer and through Christmas. But I'm enjoying it, and I'm learning a lot through it. I hope you are as well. And so we're in Matthew 16. We're finishing off this chapter this morning, starting in verse number 21 and reading down to verse number 28. And so let's read that together as we get into our passage here this morning. Matthew 16, starting in verse number 21. From that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples, how that he must go unto Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and be raised again the third day. Then Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee. But he turned and said unto Peter, Get thee behind me, Satan, thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men. Then said Jesus unto his disciples, If any man will come after me, let him deny himself, and take up his cross, and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man shall come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he shall reward every man according to his works. Verily, I say unto you, there be some standing here which shall not taste of death till they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. You know, I did something this past week that I haven't done in over 3 years. It was something very uncomfortable, but it was something that needed to be done, something that I put off for way too long, and that is I went to the gym for the first time in St. George. There's a new gym that just opened up, and I decided that I was going to join there and I was going to go back. It's been a long time, and I just can't seem, I don't know about you, but I just can't seem to motivate myself very well at home. I have some weights at home. I have things that I could do, but I just am not very motivated unless I go to the gym. And so I kind of expected that it's the first time in 3 years. I might be a little bit sore after I go. But I can still barely move my arms this morning. So if you're wondering why I'm making like awkward like T-Rex motions up here, it's because I can barely move my arms more than that. I must be getting old because I was in a lot of pain this week. I didn't quite expect that much. But I say that as I went there, I went twice this week, and I kind of avoided, I didn't do leg day because I knew that Windcrest Youth Retreat was coming up, and I wanted to be able to move around with the kids, but I've gone there a couple times, and the problem so far is this, that I've gone twice and I still look the same. Nothing has changed, and I'm a little disappointed about that. But in reality, anyone who's ever gone to the gym understands that real results take time and take a lot of effort and take a lot of work. And as you're doing that, there are highs and there are lows all along the way of this journey. I don't know about you. I look at people my age who are the same weight and the same size they are today as they were in high school, and I get a little bit jealous of those people. Because I've always struggled with that my entire life. It's always up and down and up and down. I can put it on. I can lose it. I can put it back on. And I've kind of struggled with that my entire life. There's times where, I feel really good and I'm in good shape. And
And then there's times where I just feel terrible and I put on a lot of extra weight and I don't feel good and I'm not healthy and my clothes don't fit so well and my blood pressure is up. And I'm not going to give you my whole health story here this morning, but you understand that in fitness, there's a lot of ups and downs. And I just thought, as I was doing that this week and kind of working through the pain, I thought, you know, that's a really good illustration of where we are so often spiritually. Because spiritual growth is not a straight line. At least it hasn't been for me, and it probably hasn't been for you. In fact, spiritual growth probably looks a little more like that. That you're growing overall, but there's ups and downs, there's spiritual highs, there's spiritual lows. You know, there's times in our life spiritually where there's that time of growth and excitement, and we're spiritually healthy, right? We're exercising our spiritual muscle, we're growing, we're being stretched, and sometimes, yes, it hurts a little, and sometimes we're a little sore, but we're growing. Right, there's those times of blessing in our life, and then there are times like we talked about last week that are the lows, where we're not progressing, we're not growing, but we're drifting. We're kind of going the other direction, and maybe there's some atrophy happening. There's some spiritual lows, and we're spiritually unexcited. And the things that used to excite us don't really move us anymore. We're not in a good place. And I think we've all experienced that through this journey, this Christian life, these ups and downs. And as I think of Peter here in this chapter, I think he is a great example of that. You know, if there's anyone in Scripture who is an example of highs and lows, it would have to be Peter. Do you remember where Peter was the last time that we were in the book of Matthew? You have to remember back a number of weeks ago, about 4 or 5 weeks ago now. But do you remember where Peter was the last time we left him? Peter was on a spiritual high, right? Earlier on in this chapter. Peter goes in this chapter from being a rock, where Jesus says, Peter, you are a rock. I'm going to build my church on this. Peter, you are foundational. He goes from that rock to just a few verses later, as we just read, that he becomes a stumbling block. From a rock to a stumbling block in just a few verses. And then just a couple verses later in chapter 17, we'll find him on the Mount of Transfiguration at another high again in his spiritual life. And then a few chapters later, he's back down. He's just this kind of up and down in his Christian life. And I think if we're all honest with ourselves this morning, we've all been there. Now, Peter's experience is not one that is unique to him. In fact, I think it is shared by most of us, if not all of us. Spiritual highs, spiritual lows, times of great blessing and growth, to times of great apathy and sin, where we want our own ways and our own plans and our own desires, and we chase our own ambitions and our own dreams rather than God's. And that's where we find Peter in our passage here this morning. Just back to the gym illustration for a second. You know what I found, and probably you have as well in this journey with all of these ups and downs, that there was never really a place where I felt like I could stop. Right? It didn't matter where I was, whether it was one of those highs or one of those lows, I needed to keep going. I needed to persevere. I was never content with the highs. I could always do better. You know, when someone's lifting weights in the gym, they're always trying to get a personal best. They're always trying to do better, always trying to lift more. And the lows, when you're in those places, I couldn't give up. Yes, I might have fallen off the wagon, so to speak, for a time, but I needed to get back up and get at it again. Listen, in your spiritual life, don't be content where you are. I don't know who coined the term, but this is often referred to as a holy dissatisfaction. That I'm not content spiritually where I am. that no matter where I am, whether I'm growing in Christ or whether I've fallen off the wagon and are drifting away, that I'm not content to stay there. It's a relentless pursuit of God, recognizing that I haven't arrived and there's so much more to go. It's having tasted the goodness of God and wanting more and more of that in my life. Listen, Peter was at the top. He experienced the highs. He was at the bottom. He was everywhere in between, but he continued to press on. There's a serious rebuke in this chapter, but Peter picks himself up and keeps on going. He continues in the highs and the lows, and God continues to use him in spite of those mistakes. So there's a couple things I want you to see here in this chapter this morning. First of all, I want you to see the main obstacle to discipleship. What is the main thing that keeps us, the primary thing that keeps us from following Christ, right? Because this whole passage is a call. It really centers around verse 24, but it's a call to follow Jesus. If any man will come after me, if you want to come after me, there's an implication there that we ought to want to go after Christ. We ought to want to follow him. And yet, often we face this obstacle, something we all face. What Peter does here is so indicative of what we often do when we have this call, this place of discipleship and following Jesus. And so notice in verse 21, Jesus, for the first time, Matthew says, to show unto his disciples how that he must go unto Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised again the third day. This is the first of four times in this gospel that Jesus begins to predict and prophesy and speak to his disciples of the coming suffering and pain that he is going to face. Not just suffering, but ultimately he's telling them here about his death and his burial and his resurrection from the dead. And the significance of that is totally lost on the disciples. And Peter, again, kind of as the spokesman for the group, much of like what he did in verse number 16 when he proclaimed who Jesus was, that great declaration of the deity of Christ. He speaks out, and Matthew tells us in verse 22 that Peter takes the Lord and begins to rebuke him, saying, this ought not to be so. This can't happen. This will never happen to you. We're not going to let this happen. And by the way, the word rebuke that Matthew uses there has the idea, it has a strong corrective and disapproval note to it. He is correcting Jesus. He's disapproving very strongly. Jesus says, hey, listen, I'm about to go. I'm going to suffer. I'm going to die at the hands of the chief priests and the scribes and the elders. I'm going to raise again. By the way, Peter missed that last little part that he would rise again the third day, but he takes him aside. He says, no, Lord, that can't happen. He begins to rebuke him. Here's the word that's used there for rebuke was often used of a master who or a rabbi that would correct his student. And now here's a student, a pupil, correcting his master. Lord, no, this can't happen. In other words, Peter is saying to Jesus something like this: I won't let it happen. I won't allow it. It's not going to happen. We won't let it happen. He's speaking for the disciples. Well, listen, you say you're going to go and die. We're going to make sure that that doesn't happen. We're watching out for you. And to be honest, I don't really think you can blame Peter in this passage, can you? We probably would have thought the same thing, even if we didn't have the audacity like Peter to say it out loud. No way. We won't let you be killed on our watch. We'll protect you. We'll keep that from you. It's almost as if Peter is saying that he himself will intervene and not let his master suffer and die at the hands of the religious leaders of the day. I'm not going to let it happen. No, Lord. No. And, you know, I wonder if Peter thought in his own mind, I don't know what he was thinking, but maybe he thought something like this, that Jesus would look at him and say, you know what, thank you, Peter. I appreciate that about you. You know, I'm glad you're looking out for me. I'm thankful for your heart in this. Peter, thank you for that. Have you ever given someone a compliment and they took it the wrong way as an insult? Or you said something that you meant in a positive way, but they just kind of took it the other way and took it as you were insulting them or saying something unkind to them? And you're confused as to why they're upset. Like, that's not what I meant. And I picture Peter that way, because not only does Jesus not thank him for sticking up for him, but look at his response in verse 23. But he, Jesus, turned and said unto Peter, thank you. That's not what he says, right? He says, get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense unto me. For thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men. He says this, get thee behind me, Satan. You think, wow, what kind of response was that? He says, get behind me. You are an offense to me. You're a stumbling block to me and to my mission. Why? Because you are so focused on the things of man that you're not focused on the things of God. Get behind me. See, Satan had already tried much earlier in Jesus' ministry to tempt him out of carrying out the Father's will. He tried to keep him from doing that earlier. Now he's using a different strategy and trying to use Peter, one of Jesus' disciples, his own disciple, to hinder his ministry. Can you imagine with me just for a second the shock that Peter felt? Just the surprise as these words are coming out of the mouth of Jesus. I'm sure that Peter meant what he said for good, right? His intentions were good. So what was the problem? Why this response? I think the last words there, verse 23, really sum it up. It says, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men. He says, Peter, listen, you're thinking, your concerns, it's more rooted in human concern and human ideas and human opinions than it is on God's concerns, and God's ideas and God's plans and his purpose. See, Peter's perspective in his own thinking, his own human mind, and this is the way he was thinking, and this is probably the way that we would think as well, but Peter's perspective was that he was going to try everything he could in his power to protect Jesus. He was going to try everything he could to allow Jesus to avoid the pain and the suffering of this death. But what he didn't understand was that in God's thinking, in God's purpose, that included and in fact necessitated the suffering and the death and the burial and the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. What Peter was trying to do was stop God's plan, because he was thinking human-wise, he was not focusing on God's thoughts. God had a greater plan and a greater purpose that Peter could not comprehend. So in Peter's limited understanding, he was actually undermining the plan and purpose of God and working against him. And it's not that Jesus calls him Satan, but he's addressing the influence behind his words and the desire to oppose the will and the purpose and the plan of God. See, if Peter would have gotten his way, Christ wouldn't have gone to the cross. God's plan of redemption would not have been completed. And in this way, Peter became an offense, a stumbling block, a trap to the will and the plans and the purpose of God. That brings it all back again. The question is this: What is the main obstacle that we face in truly following Jesus? What is it that truly keeps us from this kind of discipleship. And I would say this, and this is what we find in Peter. I think this is what we find in our own hearts so many times as well. But the main obstacle, the main thing that keeps me from discipleship is this. It's me. It's selfishness and self-centeredness. This is true in my own life. This is what we see here in Peter. That Jesus demands, and we're going to look at this in just a second, but Jesus demands self-denial and sacrifice and surrender. But the reality is this, I have a hard time doing that sometimes. There's a lot of things that get in my way. Peter was thinking of things of man instead of things of God, and I find myself doing the same thing sometimes. You know, true committed discipleship, a true following of Christ, requires this fundamental shift from prioritizing my own desires and my own ambitions, my own comforts, my own wants, to fully submitting to the Lord's will. And when I get those things mixed up, that's where I run into problems. You say, well, what does that look like? Let me give you just a couple of practical ways that this might work its way out in our life. And again, this is not, there's so many more ways that this works its way out. These are just a few examples of what this might look like, of prioritizing my own will and my own desires over God's will, thinking more on the things of man than the things of God. What does that look like? Well, here's one. We spend more time on entertainment and hobbies and sports or personal projects than we do in prayer and Bible reading and study and time together with church community and church family. We hesitate to give because it means we might not have as much ourselves. And we may have to go without some things and feel the pain of that discomfort. Another way, we may pack our schedules so full of extracurricular things for our family that we miss out on some of the more important things, like church and family prayer time, family devotions together around God's word. Here's another way. We make decisions. We looked at this over the summer, a whole study on it. But we make decisions based on our own intellect and our understanding and our skill and our resources rather than relying on the Lord and submitting our way and surrendering ourselves to Him. We don't share our faith because that's really not our job. Or I may be made fun of. Or face backlash from my family or my work or my friends. Those are just a few examples, but in each one of those, and I'm sure you can think of more, and make this personal, but in each one of those things, I've moved from this place of dependence and surrender back to a place of comfort where my desires and my ambitions and my comforts are being fed, and I'm thinking more about the things of man than I am the things of God. It's kind of like saying this, and we would never say this out loud, but our actions declare this. If I had to choose between God's will or my will, I'm going to choose my will because it's comfort. It's easy. It's what I desire. It makes sense to me. And I think what we find here with Peter is that even good intentions sometimes can take us away from the will of God. So the question is simply this. What is it in your life? Where do you find the things of men conflicting with the things of God in your life, where you're having that struggle between the two and you realize that you're more focused on your own things and the things of God? What is it for you? What are you finding hard to surrender? There's this obstacle here that Peter faces to discipleship. He's not thinking properly. And I want you to notice, and really this is the heart in verse 24, that there's a call here. Jesus is called to discipleship. Jesus said in verse 24, then said Jesus unto his disciples, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Jesus takes this self-centeredness of Peter and he contrasts it. He turns it around into a radical call to discipleship. Peter says, Lord, I don't want you to suffer. I don't want you to go through that grief and pain and hardship and loss. And Jesus says, wait a minute, Peter, that's exactly what I'm calling you to. I'm calling you to that exact same thing. If your desire is to come after me, if you really want to follow me, then you're going to have to die to yourself and your own will and your own desires and your own comforts and follow me. I say it this way, this is the heart. I think this is the heart of this whole message and this whole passage. There are so many people that want to be fans of Jesus, just like when you go to a sporting match, a hockey game, a soccer game, a baseball game. There's a lot of fans there. And those fans get to sit in the comfortable seats and watch from a distance and not really be involved in the game. They're not super invested. And they let others play and others serve and others give, but not me. That's too much for me. There are a lot of fans, but there's not a whole lot of genuine followers of Christ. Back to the illustration of the gym. Yeah, I can want all the benefits. I can desire the fitness and the health that comes with it. I can want to have, you know, bigger muscles and more energy and more endurance and better physical health. I can want all the aspects of that fitness, but unless I actually go and do the hard things, I'm never going to get it. I can desire, but unless I get involved and do it for myself, I'm not going to have it. I'm sure you've heard the statement, no pain, no what? No gains. That's what it is. No pain, no gain. You have to do the hard things. If you want the benefits, you have to put in the work. Jesus says, listen, if you want to come after me, if that's truly your desire, Peter, you declared just a short while ago who I was in front of all of these people. You are the Christ. You're the Messiah. You declared, excuse me, you declared who I was. You were right in that. But if you really desire to follow me, then you have to be willing to do the hard things to come after me. So what are the requirements? He gives them three things really simply in verse 24. If you want to come after me, what do? First of all, you deny yourself. Deny yourself. Surrender your control to the Lord. To deny yourself means to relinquish your self-centered desires and ambitions and comforts and independence. It's choosing God's will over my will and acknowledging that life is no longer about fulfilling my desires. It's about God and His will and His plans and His purposes for me. It's not leaning on my own understanding, but in everything, I'm acknowledging Him. It's committing my steps to the Lord. It's allowing Him to have full control. It's sacrificing my comfort in order to serve others. It's resisting the temptation to prioritize worldly success and possessions over spiritual growth. Jesus says, first of all, you need to deny yourself, surrender control. Deny yourself, but also it's taking up your cross. There's an idea here of sacrifice. In Jesus' day and age, the cross was a symbol of suffering and shame and death. To take up your cross means to be willing to endure hardship or rejection or persecution for the cause of Christ. It's a call to live sacrificially, even at a great cost. There's this idea of sacrifice with this. You know, Jesus knew, he had just been predicting, he knew that he was literally going to take up his cross and be an example of complete, full surrender to the Lord's will. And he calls us to that same place of accepting and moving forward in God's will. You know, the reality this morning is this: we haven't really been asked to sacrifice too much. I think in our culture, in our day and age, we don't often really know some of the hardships that come with following Christ. And I don't mean to overlook. There are some that have sacrificed a great deal of family and friends. And there are sacrifices to following Christ. But we all have been called to this place of total surrender. Denying myself, denying my will, and taking up my cross, willing to sacrifice anything and follow Christ. That's the third one. Follow me. Take up your cross and follow me. There's an obedient action here. Following, this is where we get it mixed up sometimes. Following Jesus is just not, it's not just about belief. Right? Following Jesus is not just about the head knowledge. That's good, and we need to have that. But following Jesus is about actively, actually going out and obeying his teachings, doing what he's called us to do, and modeling our life after his example. That requires a daily commitment and a willingness to trust him wherever he leads. Deny yourself. Take up your cross. Follow him. What does that look like? I think it looks differently for all of us. It doesn't look the same for each and every person. God calls us to sacrifice different things. He calls us all to deny ourselves and follow him, but that may look differently for each and every one of us. Maybe for you it means serving in a certain way, getting involved. Maybe it means pursuing reconciliation in a relationship that's been broken. Maybe it means being more intentional. Maybe not even being more intentional, just being intentional about sharing the gospel with people. Maybe it means getting rid of some old habits and sins that aren't pleasing to the Lord. Maybe it's living in a way that reflects the values and the love of Jesus. Whatever it is, God calls us to this place of self-denial and taking up our cross and following him. You know, God doesn't need more fans in the game. Churches, so many churches are just full of people who are there to spectate and intake and consume. And if they don't get what they want, they're out. We don't need any more of those. God needs those who are totally, fully committed to following him. He calls us all to this life of true discipleship. The command, I think, to follow Christ should be enough. But then, we'll just look at this very quickly. We're almost done. Jesus goes on to give us three reasons. And we're not going to spend a lot of time on these. But in verses 25 through 27, we're going to look at verse 28 next week. Because I think it goes into this next passage, the Mount of Transfiguration. But in just verse 25 through 27, Jesus gives us these reasons for discipleship. Why should we follow Christ? Why should we deny ourselves and take up our cross and go after him? Now, the call to do it should be enough, right? Jesus said, follow me. Okay. But then he gives us these reasons. And notice that each of these reasons in verse 25 through 27 are preceded by the Greek word gar, which means for. So it's they're kind of follow Christ for, verse 25, for, verse 26, for, verse 27. So he gives us the kind of outlines. He gives us a good outline here of these three reasons that we ought to follow Christ. So what are these reasons? First of all, eternal gain. Verse 25 says, for whosoever shall save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. Following Christ leads to true life, even if it means sacrificing temporary things. Jesus contrasts the two approaches to life. Either you cling to it selfishly and you hold on to it, or you completely surrender it to him. You know, attempting to save our life, living for self-preservation and personal gain and worldly pursuits, results in ultimate loss. But on the other hand, losing our life for Christ's sake, living in obedience and devotion and service to the Lord, leads to eternal life. So to Peter, to the disciples, to us specifically, there is a cost to following Christ. There is a cost to being a follower. The new life is only found by giving up the old life. But the thought here is this: it's absolutely worth it. Why would we ever choose to deny ourselves and take up our cross and follow him? Because that commitment leads to eternal life, and that is so much greater than the sacrifice. It's so much greater than anything the world has to offer. There's a benefit. Yes, there may be some things that we have to give up, but there's a benefit to following Christ. Yes, there's sacrifice involved. No, it's not always easy. But in the end, it's always worth it. Eternal gain. Secondly, we see the soul's worth or the value of a soul. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Jesus asked these two kind of rhetorical questions, and the answer is there's nothing. There's nothing in this world that's so valuable, that's so great, that it's worth me losing my eternal soul. He's highlighting the immense value of the human soul. You know, even if someone in this world could gain all that the world has to offer, all the money, all the power, all the fame, all the pleasure, even if they could gain all of those things and it cost them their soul, then what good is all those things? They're nothing. That's why Paul said, I take all of these things and I count them but dung. I count them as nothing. They don't mean anything to me. What can you do with that? Isn't that what Solomon talks about all through Ecclesiastes? You can gain all of these things, but after you die, where does it go? What's the point? Their eternal being and their eternal relationship with God is so much more important, so much more valuable. The value of a soul so far surpasses anything temporal. Nothing can compare. And then notice just quickly the reward of Christ in verse 27. For the Son of Man shall come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then shall he reward every man according to his work. Jesus will come, and he will reward those who faithfully followed him and lived for his glory. The idea there is those that have lost their life will gain it at that point. Those who have gained it in the world will lose it. There's both a judgment and a reward. Jesus will make all things right. The point Jesus is making is this: it's the call to discipleship is hard. It involves doing hard things. It's not natural for us to deny ourselves and take up our cross and follow Christ. It's not easy to do. But he's saying this: it's absolutely worth it. It's absolutely worth it. So what does that mean for us? I'll give you just two words as we close. Two words that where I was really thinking through this whole sermon. The first word is the word consistency. When I think of Peter, and from our opening illustration all the way through of these highs and lows throughout his life. But in the end, Peter continued to be faithful and God used him in miraculous ways because he was just consistent. Yes, there was ups. Yes, there was downs, but he just kept going. He just kept following the Lord. There was consistency in his spiritual walk. There will be ups and downs in your spiritual life. Some days you'll feel like it, and other days you won't. Some days you'll have victory, and other days you won't. You'll fall and mess up. We've all been there. But be faithful. Be consistent. Don't let circumstances determine your faithfulness. Determine that you're going to be faithful regardless of where you are. Be a follower of Christ, a committed follower, not just a fan of him. Get involved. Be committed. Deny yourself. Take up your cross and follow him. That call is to each and every one of us this morning. Be consistent in that. And the second word is compassion. I can't help but think if Jesus talks about losing your life to gain it, the value of the soul, the reward and the judgment of Christ when he comes, I can't help but think that taking up our cross and following Christ means bringing people with us. What does it actually look like to be a committed follower of Christ, to obey his commands? I think it looks like an understanding of the true value of a soul. It's understanding the eternity to be gained and winning and discipling others to that end. Jesus is coming, and he will reward those that have sacrificed their lives for him and punish those who have not. And the truth is this, I want to bring as many people with me as I can. Do we truly understand the value of the soul? If we do, then we'll have compassion. We'll be consistent in our Christian life. We'll be committed. We'll have compassion. Be a follower of Christ.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. My prayer is that God would use the preaching of his word in your life in a special way. If there's any way that we can be a help to you, please feel free to reach out at bibcinfo@gmail.com. Or if you're in the area, you're always welcome to come join us in worshiping the Lord together every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock and Wednesday at 6:30. May the Lord bless you today.